The DL Debate, brought to you by the Dry Arch Complex and 24-hour service station, Letterkenny.
Evening all, thanks for joining us on episode 17 of the DL Debate, wherever you're at in the world. I'm beaming out from Lismonahan here via Canada and Highland Studios there in the mountaintop. He's keeping me right. Just starting the show, I have to start it on a sad note, unfortunately, with the passing of St. Union's legend, James McGettigan, more affectionately known as Gouldie. A fantastic character. We would have seen him around the park and a huge servant of St. Union's and a handy soccer player as well, of course. Inducted into the Hall of Fame 2003. He won three championships and four leagues, and he passed away at the age of 89, and he'll be greatly missed. So thoughts and prayers are with his family right now. Folks, coming on the show, I have a man by the name of Jerry McLaughlin coming on later. Jerry was a PRO with Derry for 9 years and quite a character. After dinner, speaker, he's going to be telling us about his life in GAA. But before that, I have a man that doesn't need much introduction, and I was just looking back at an unbelievable career he had between club and county with Turlestrand and Sligo, and it's no coincidence that both teams had a serious purple patch during this man's playing days. It is, of course, the one and only Eamon O'Hara.
Dev, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm the best, Eamon, the same as yourself. We're kind of bluffing from home here, the two of us.
We are. I'm just going to say to you, first and foremost, I can't believe that this is your 17th episode and I'm only coming on now. You must be really screaming.
Do you know what? I call that building up to the best, Eamon. Building up to the best. Not at all, my man, not at all. Do you know what, Eamon, down the road from us, the whole Sligo thing, and you're just looking back at you, and I don't mean this in any kind of condescending way, but of course with Sligo not hitting the heights, if a team goes on a run, everybody mark there's a bit of love for them. So your story there, and particularly, I obviously know you and known you for years, and we played together for Ireland that went on tour, and with an seen you about, you know, down in Sligo, obviously my sister lived in Strandhill beside you and that. But your story, Eamon, from a Sligo perspective, it's an amazing one, and it's one that I think it was champion of the underdog, really, you know, Eamon. But before we get to your glittering career there, growing up, Eamon, I was just wondering about your influences, because I know young Sligo lads in your time could grow up looking at Eamon O'Hara, but growing up yourself, what was pushing you? Was it Gaelic all the way, athleticism? Did you play a bit of soccer?
Well, I tell you, I suppose coming from a small little a parish, you can call it, obviously in the South Sligo, a place called Turlestrand, which you mentioned yourself. You know, we had very, very little going for us. There was a church and a shop, and the next thing was your football field, and after that then there was very, very little. We'd have to obviously go to the likes of where I was located. Ballinagh was quite close, Sligo Town was close as well, and then our neighbouring club would be Tubbercurry. So if we needed to go to get a big shop, if you want to call it, you'd have to either go into one of those three places to shop. But my mum obviously hailed from Ballinagh, so I spent a lot of time down there in Mayo, so I suppose I have Mayo blood running through me. And I suppose in terms of football influence, it was just looking at them, because the reality was that, you know, we didn't have a tradition of any success in Sligo. There was never any, you know, nobody ever knew. I was never aware of a Sligo team down through the years growing up as a young fella, 6, 7, 8, but I was aware of the Mayos because they obviously had been winning Connacht titles and obviously Galway as well, but then going on to compete in All Ireland. And I suppose they were the ones that I kind of looked up to. We had nothing else. There was no soccer, there was no basketball. We just played Gaelic football. Obviously, we had our community games, and I was into athletics, so I was blessed with a bit of pace. So I used to compete in the community games as well, and on the sprint side of it, 60, 80, 100-metre runs. And, you know, I was lucky to get up to Mosney and win an All Ireland silver medal in sprinting. So I suppose I married sprinting and football together, and I just formed it from there. But in terms of my influences, it was always my dad. Like, you know, my dad always brought me everywhere, particularly with community games. We'd go all over the place, and then with obviously the football, we'd just go up to the field and we'd be kicking about together, and you'd be just obviously trying to get a balance of, you know, one of my attributes was soloing at pace and turning defence into attack. And, you know, at times my finishing was erratic, but it was because I was going too fast too often. And Dad would always try to say, just compose yourself as best you can. And, you know, I just tried to work on it from there. So, you know, 92.
Eamon, you did manage to win an All-Ireland schools title, though, with Abbey.
Yeah, Banada Abbey. So we were lucky there when, you know, it was a collection of us, obviously, with South Sligo. We had the likes of Trevor Curry, had also had a secondary school as well, had the convent there. But in Banada, in my own parish of Tullastrand, we were lucky to get guys coming in from our club, or their neighbouring clubs in Curry, Bunanadan, Clunacool. So we were lucky that a collection of guys came together into the school. There was only, you know what I mean, it was a boys and girls school of 250, and, you know, there was obviously basketball and Gaelic football was played. The girls played basketball, the guys played Gaelic football, and, you know, we had a freshers team that came in there, and, you know, we started to win things, and we won at freshers, we won at juvenile, we won at junior, and this was, you know, B's and C level in Connacht, and then we got a very, very good team. We had the likes of that, and then to Henry, you may or may not remember, Mendo used to play, you know, county at the age of 18, and he repeated a Leaving Cert, and we won a Connacht B championship, or sorry, a Connacht C championship with him, and it really, really lifted the whole school in terms of winning a Connacht at senior level. And even though it was only C, it just lifted an awful lot. And then as a result, then we were promoted up to B section, and we just got all those young fellas. I was in third year that year with a strong team of players. And we went on to win on All Ireland B against Eden Derry in a replay, and that was in 92, and it really, really set the
title
for us.
Big title there, Eamon, as you said, you'd worked up to it, and you're talking about 18. You made your own debut against, of course, Mayo at 18 in midfield. Now, Eamon, we all know we've been 18-year-old, maybe throw you in a corner forward, maybe come on sub with wing half, but to start at midfield, that was a massive baptism of fire.
It was a baptism of fire, like, you know what I mean? I thought I was up to it, you know what I mean? I genuinely did, and I suppose I had a good league campaign going into that. Obviously, you'd remember the league was, you'd play three rounds of the league from September to December, and then there'd be a bit of a break, and then you'd get back into it. So I played the league games, and I had done quite well, but you get up against the Mayo, and I walked into it. I can remember it, I was anxious, and I was nervous, and I was looking forward to it, and then I wasn't. In my own head, wasn't actually there at all. It was just an event that was coming, and I expected that it was just going to perform, and I just wasn't at it. And after 18 minutes, Lord rest Johnny Stenson, who was a manager, joint manager with Mick Laffey, they just gave me the curly finger and saved me from a humiliation, because it just wasn't happening. But it's easy to say it wasn't happening for me. It wasn't happening for the team. We got annihilated that day, and you know, one of 15 could have been taken off, and that was just the way it fell for me. But it was a baptism of fire. And funny enough, that was in 92, Donegal won the All-Ireland, wasn't it? 92, he won it,
yes.
With Matt Gallagher. Matt Gallagher, for one of our celebrations with Banada and everything else, winning the All-Ireland, Matt Gallagher had brought down the Sam Maguire. So, you know, I can remember then saying, God, this is cool, like, you know, this is what I like, you know, this is an All-Ireland winner. Meeting this guy and getting up close with him and kind of saying, yeah, he's no bigger than myself. And you're just kind of eyeing him up from afar, and you're just saying, yeah, I could be one of those. So obviously the baptism in 94 didn't really go as well as it wanted, but you learned from it. And I think as a team, we learned from it, and credit to the boys. They just brought in a bunch of young fellas. We had played under 21. Mayo had beaten us in two Connacht finals at under 21 level in 94, 95. And I had been captain of those two teams, so we were very, very close. Mayo had gone on and been beaten very, very closely in replays in the All-Ireland final. So we knew ourselves that we had a bunch of fellas that were good, not breaking any records or not winning anything, but we were competitive. And, you know, it just progressed then. We went on, and as you said then, it was we kind of came from nowhere, and we became very, very competitive.
Mm. And Eamon, just even from that first debut, I think your obsession with how you played and how you treated the game is probably what propelled you, because you can tell so much that if something didn't go right for you, you're not walking off thinking, ah, fake it, maybe the next day. You are like, this isn't happening again. And you can see top players, and particularly you, I think you wore your heart on your sleeve. But as you progressed in physically, Eamon, and I was just thinking about you last night, if you were an inch or two smaller, you couldn't have played midfield because you were right on the bar. If you were an inch or two higher, you would have probably lost that running power. So you were just at that perfect physical size to be this powerhouse runner that was big enough to play midfield but could carry the ball from your 40 to their 40. And then what you had at the end, Eamon, I don't remember your erratic finishing too much, but I'd say you could finish as well. And I think you became then what was kind of in that era of football, that perfect machine in the midfield that every team wanted. This guy who could go up and down all day, could finish, could carry the ball. That's the kind of player you became.
Yeah, I suppose what complemented my fitness, I suppose, and my strength, I wasn't that I was a bigger man or anything else like that. We had a farm at home and we used to do dairy. And so obviously my dad, he worked as an AI technician. So he was gone very, very early in the morning, particularly around summer times, and came home quite late because it was always a busy time for him. So for me, I was always doing the milking. And, you know, physically, you know, we didn't have a high-end type of dairy now, by the way. So it wasn't the case that everything was piped and the milk was being dropped into a tank and it was then taken away. We were working with Currie McCranns trying to lift them in from one thing into another, and obviously it was a rough type of a setup, if for want of a better word. And I suppose I found myself always lifting and pulling and dragging and working with cattle and obviously feeding silage and all of those types of things. It made me a very, very fit and strong young fella. And stronger than your normal type of guy that would be the same age as myself. And I suppose that really, really helped me. And then obviously, you know, you mentioned the speed and the athleticism, I suppose. I had a good pair of hands. I was able to bring that ball. I was able to beat fellas. Yes, you're right. I was competing against, for example, and it's, you know, Kevin Walsh, 6'4", Sean O'Donnell, 6'6", Lee McHale, 6'5". You know, all these tall guys were all around me, around the midfield area. Fergal O'Donnell, 6'3" at midfield for Roscommon. So all my competitiveness was against this. So I was always thinking, how can I'm not going to beat these fellas at a straight-up catch. So I need to step away. I need to try and run on to football. I need to know and, you know, come short, win something, and then be able to take them on. And when I did win it, they weren't able to get their hands on me. But if I was competing in the air, we just struggled. And I suppose Paul Durkin, as a midfield partner, Dean complimented me an awful lot because he did a lot of the heavy lifting of you, as you know yourself, the pushing and shoving, where I could just nip in and out and catch a ball in front of guys if he was being held off. So we worked very, very well together, myself and Paul, and I suppose we complimented each other. And he just took it from there, I suppose. And my game, the game evolved. I went back and I looked at the Connacht final of 94, the team that Mayo bet us. The Mayo team beat us, and that was Leitrim year to win a Connacht title, and it was awful, awful football. Christ, it was catch and kick stuff, and you know it's embarrassing to actually look back at it at times, and you know to think that we were hammered. So it shows you how bad we were at that stage as well. But you know it evolved, we changed, and we had PJ Carroll come in, and then obviously we had the great Mickey Moran come into us.
Yeah.
And Mickey was like the
fascinating years there. Obviously 2002, you know, just looking back at it, I just can't believe some of the stuff. I don't know, I've obviously forgotten. It's amazing when you look back what you forget. And just going back to your work on the farm there, I mean, that's Martin McHugh's line. He was always saying they didn't need to do weights because boys were doing physical work. So while we were taking a handy here in Donegal, you were wrestling bulls down in Sligo. No wonder you were flying it. But even looking to 2002, you know, obviously you went to the Connacht final, you were a common team. The rest of us might have known it, but now as you're patching that together, there was a bit of belief coming, you were a side that were thinking, hey, we're going to start to tip the balance. Obviously, that Connacht final with Galway so close, and the games that happened after it. But first of all, at that Connacht level, Eamon, you were going in that year, we're ready to win a Connacht, you know. I don't think the rest of us up in Donegal are that, you know. We're obviously very insular in our championships. We're not really looking too much at other teams. We would have played just an odd friendly, and there's a few ding-dongs in the middle of it as well.
Absolutely,
So that bit of bite was needed, you know. It wasn't as if, as you said, the Sligo of old, it was starting to change. You weren't going there to, you know, make up the numbers. You were coming for a tilt in 2002. What a season that was.
Yeah, it was, and I think it stemmed from when the Mickey Moran came in 97. He came in 97, we got to another Connacht final in 97, and Mayo, against Mayo, and the betters by a point, and there was different talk about, you know, the referee blew it up early, etc., and all that type of thing, Michael Curley from Galway, and he didn't, to be quite honest with you. Just our run came late, we only started getting self-belief, Brendan, at that stage. But Mayo went on to an All-Ireland final there and got bet in the replay and all of that in 97. So we were obviously getting a little bit close, and then obviously Galway in 98 winning the All-Ireland, it became quite competitive. And at that stage, we had drawn with that a very similar Galway team in 95 and 96. So we were looking back and saying, Jesus, you know, these are two teams, Galway and Mayo, contesting All-Ireland. We're not a million miles away, so, you know, but we needed to just perform really well on 2 days. We had to obviously beat a Galway or beat a Mayo, but to get to a Connacht final, we had to play really well to beat a Roscommon or a Leitrim. So for us to get two games back-to-back was our biggest challenge in terms of playing really, really well. But Mickey came and went, and Fordy came, Peter Ford came in that era in 01, 02, and... you know, really, he brought an level of, you know, self-belief, and on top of what Mickey had built on in terms of making us into really good footballers, comfortable footballers. And, you know, we had 8 or 10 fellas that were all above, in terms of athletic ability, all above 6'1", 6'2". So well able to run, well able to compete in the air, well able to sort of create football chances and take chances when they came. And, you know, people forget, I think, Galway had won us in 01. The All-Ireland in 01, and we get to a Connacht final against them in 02, and a game where we didn't play whatsoever. Now, they will say they probably played, you know, average as well, but we, Peter Ford made 5 changes that day because we were that poor on the day, and we only lose by a goal in wet conditions. And we could start seeing that if we put in a performance, we could play quite well. We then obviously go on and we play Kildare up in Croke Park, and all of a sudden then they were saying, well, we bet Kildare. This is a Kildare team in 98 that had been beaten in the All-Ireland final, and was getting, you know what I mean, maybe they were at the end of their end, but it was still a big scalp to get. Obviously played Dublin then the following week, and they gave us a bit of a turnover, but, you know, we were saying, you know, we're not a million miles away. And then obviously 02 came, and we got a chance at the likes of a Galway. We played Tyrone, who are going to be All-Ireland champions in 03. You know, we didn't know that, but we gave them a beating. Obviously, then played Armagh and going to a draw, had chances to win it. Armagh people will believe that they had loads of chances to win it, but like in terms of the ding-dong battle, it could have gone our way if we had taken our chances, and particularly even in the replay, we kicked a couple of simple wides. And, we were competing against Galway, who were All-Ireland champions, Tyrone, who are going to be All-Ireland champions next, the following year, and Armagh, who are actually going to be the All-Ireland champions that year. We were in the mix with them, and we were that close. You know, we were that close, and all we needed was something to go our way. Didn't go our way, but it just shows
you. There seemed to be something, Eamon, about your team at that time that it seemed to not care for, say, reputation or a team, I suppose, trying to impose themselves. It seemed with you almost that if you didn't play well, or if the so-called better team, I mean, Tyrone had done a huge lead on you in 2002. There seemed to be this character in you that it was almost like, say, a new young player that you threw into a setup didn't really realise what was at stake, you know, and you could come back. And once you got on this momentum run, you had this mad energy that would push through you. And of course, you mentioned Armagh, the fisted equaliser last minute, put that in the back of the net. Armagh don't get their day in the sun. I would have felt bad for them for that. But yeah. I mean, that would have been amazing. That, as you said, Eamon, anything could have happened in that season. That's how close you were.
And that's what it was. And I think it was not organised in a way, like, you know what I mean? For us to win on All-Ireland, if you look at Armagh, you compare that, and you mention it there, they'd won a 5 or 6, or, you know, maybe 3 or 4, I can't remember hindsight now, but 3 or 4 definitely Ulster titles at that stage. So they were knocking on the door for the few years prior to that. We hadn't won anything at Connacht. If we had won maybe a Connacht title at that stage, we could have kicked on a little bit. But when you weren't able to win your province, you're definitely not going to win an All-Ireland final. And I always say that, and I still say it now, if you're not dominant in your province, you're not going to win an All-Ireland. And we just didn't have the know-how about winning those games. And that's where we really struggled there in terms of, yes, when we got a bit of, like, Tyrone bet us off the field for 25 minutes, and then all of a sudden we got a little bit of momentum, and then all of a sudden there was a self-belief there. And I think that's just a self-belief that just seems to kick in when things start going your way. And when we got going, we were very, very hard stopped. But it's to get that self-belief, that trigger to get going. And that was our biggest challenge. And we weren't able to get that. So if we'd won a Connacht title in and around 01, we could then turn around and say, you know, this is it. We know how to win. We've confidence in our own ability. Because success, obviously, you know yourself, when you win Ulster, you believe you're able to beat anybody. You know, that ultimately comes with you. So we just were lacking that confidence, that self, that real deep down self-belief that we could actually win it.
But yet, Eamon, how close you were to one that, you know, I'm hearing back now stories. I was listening to some interviews and some stuff from Armagh at that time. The depth that they were going to around training, tactics, mindset, it was unbelievable. I didn't. They were taking in top sports personalities from all over, or top people that were able to evolve the team, and they were going to training camps and stuff that the rest of us were like, whatever. But of course, all those things are going to help and they're going to bed in. Whereas for Sligo, but like Donegal at that time, it was more or less off the cuff. And I suppose that's the thing, Eamon, you think about that extra bit of preparation or that extra bit of tactical know-how. Put that in, and the Sligo team. But maybe that's what made you who you were. Eamon, you seemed to be able to just, the spirit would come through you. And I often admired it at times, the way you would never say die. I remember getting spanked by Armagh before, and the toil went in, you know, and we just thought, we're not going to get back at these guys. But you didn't seem to care about things again.
That's what we were brought up on. Like, you know what I mean? You just hang in there. You may not win the game, but like, still make a good account of yourself. And that was our DNA. Like, you know, you look at Kerry. The DNA in Kerry is to win cups. And from the as a young fella growing up, you're expected to win, to be successful. In Sligo, we have no tradition. So our tradition is basically, you know, go out there and make a good account of yourself and show pride in the jersey and, you know, really, really fight at it and fight to the final whistle. And I think that was ingrained in this team. I think you mentioned there, funny, you mentioned about Armand. Yeah, you talked about, you know, the guys that they got in and stuff like that and, you know, training camps. You know, 40 was the first fella to actually put it out there to bring us away on a holiday. Now, not that we'd won anything, but he said, listen, we're going to go away for a holiday. We're into Lanzarote for a week. And Jesus, it was the making of the team, to be quite honest with you. It was absolutely brilliant in terms of lads getting together for a week on the pitch, taking the crack, pulling the crack. Absolutely, that everything and anything that you can imagine went on. And we just became such a close bunch of lads. For the first time ever, there was lads who knew everything about everyone, you know what I mean, in terms of your family, in terms of, you know, guys knew each other. It wasn't a case of that, you know, tell me something about so-and-so. Everyone knew each other really, really well, which was so nice. And it was such a great way of sort of getting an insight. And I really, really brought everyone together. And I think that was one of the things that made us that bunch of players, a really, really good bunch of players, was that unity, that understanding, that level of respect, and that no one was going to take the piss. Now, don't worry, don't get me wrong. It wasn't perfect across the board. It could have been better in certain things. Lads could apply themselves a little bit better in terms of diet and all that type of thing. But that brought us together, that sort of trips away. We had two of them in Lanzarote, and we were lucky to get back the second time. I don't know how we managed to organise it, but it was just that type of crack. And you know yourself, when you get away like that, it just brings a group of lads together, and you're talking about it a year or two later, still flagging somebody about what something happened, you know.
Right, brilliant. And listen, you were obviously an All-Star in 2002, brilliant, and again, not something that happens in Sligo too often. You obviously played for Ireland in 01 and 02 as well. Eamon, just at that time, before we come on to building up towards the brilliant Connacht victory in 07, your club, Tour de Strand, you said what a small area it was. You were going through an absolute fantastic stage of dominating Sligo club football. Life must have been pretty busy. Was there time to catch a breath?
Well, I suppose, firstly, about the All-Star, I think, you know, one, I probably played better, and I know Stevie O'Neill got selected at centre forward that year, and I think I probably played better that year. And I suppose for me, when I look back and say, you know, listen, I'm not going to be dismissive of my All-Star, and I'm not willing to give it away to anybody too lightly, but I suppose you've got to be honest in your assessment. And I think I probably played better than I thought I could have won it that year. The following year, I got nominated in 01, then I won it in 02. And I think, to be honest with you, probably it was John McEntee played really well, had a really, really good season, obviously, that year with Armagh winning the All-Ireland. He was lucky not to win it that year. So I suppose I was lucky to win it in 02. Maybe it was a sympathy vote, but you know what I mean? I don't care. I'm going to take it with both hands and hold on to it and obviously go with it. But so for me, yeah, it was a very, very special thing to get. Going back to the question of the club, I suppose, you know, there was a downtime in all when Mickey Moran's last year was 2000. We had bet Mayo for the first time ever. The first time ever from home. So it was a huge win for us. And then we were coming into a semi-final against Galway. And Galway, you know, they absolutely ambushed us down in Markovitch Park. So it wasn't a case that we went up to go, we got ambushed. They brought the ambush down to us. We were 11 points to no score down and finished 21-4 points at the end of the game in Markovitch Park. So we humiliated. And I suppose for me, it was just a sort of a real kick in the balls, to be quite honest with you. And I was on the plane that following Tuesday after that Sunday to Chicago. I went to Chicago for four months, and it was the best thing I ever did. I just got away from everything. Bearing in mind, we had won in 99 our county final. I'd won my third county final at that stage. So we'd won in 94, won in 97, and won in 99. And I decided I was going to leave in 0-0. I just had enough of football. And I went over to Chicago, and I was lucky enough. We got on a team. Niall Buckley was over there. He was permanent over there at that stage. Sean Marty Lockhart came over with me. And, you know, we had a great bunch of fellas over there in St. Brendan's in Chicago, and looked after us so well, and we ended up winning.
I hope you roomed with Sean Marty and not Buckley.
There was no space in Buckley's room, I'd say. As you know yourself.
Yes, indeed. I've experienced it.
He was some character, Jesus. We can chat about that in a second. we will talk about him now, because he was an unbelievable footballer.
He was, right? Some
that
talent.
Guy was,
yeah.
Oh, he was class. But I can remember, actually, you were on this as well. We were training with the great Brian McNiff was our manager, and Buckley, we were obviously all, the team was getting narrowed down and narrowed down, the panels getting narrowed down to get this trip over to Australia. And Buckley pulled a hamstring the Tuesday night before the team was going to be named on the Thursday. And you remember this, no? Mm. And he had given it a tweak, so anyway, the team was named and he got on it. So that was grand. Obviously, we were going to have a winner. I think it was probably two or three weeks before we actually got on the plane. And Buckley kind of had come back into a bit of form again, and obviously his hamstring was okay. And we were having our final training sessions, and Buckley pulled the hamstring again. And at this stage, he knew himself that he wasn't going to be able to play in Australia, but he didn't tell anybody about it, and obviously got on the plane and got over to Australia. So there was a case of that. You know, he wasn't going to miss out on this trip. And our first warm-up session, remember, I think we went for wherever it was. I think it was in Perth, in Brisbane. We went out for an hour light, very, very light jog. And just after about fucking 100 yards, Buckley puts the hand up and says, geez, I'm after pulling my hamstring or whatever else. So he became a stats man for the 2 weeks we were out there. So he was a great guy. And so ended up, we stayed in a house in Chicago with him. There was 13 of us in a house between girls and lads. Ken Killeen from Sligo was over there as well. There was a number of girls playing club football and county football as well. So there was 13 of us in John Harn's house over there. And, you know, they gave us a card, you know, the usual crack, and we were well looked after. But we had just had a great bunch of fellas. But I think for me, that gave me much more of a different perspective. You mentioned there about, you know, the way I applied myself and everything else and the focus. I probably was too much on it, you know what I mean? I was too much switched on and too much, you know, looking for perfection all the time. And, that gave me a much different perspective in 0-0. And coming back then, it sort of said, you know, when I'm playing football, I want to do it right. But when I'm away from football, I want to also do that right and be able to switch off. And I think that helped me as a footballer overall, that experience of going out there and seeing a different perspective and seeing what I meant to people over there. And it was great crack, and we had great fun, and, you know, the usual crack that goes on over there, but it was great experience, and obviously it helped me going forward.
Just at the right time then, Eamon, you got, because you're saying, even though I would have thought that was your life, of course it gets very heavy on you, and of course we are trying to mix work and life, family, and get everything together. Sometimes you say, because the club was so successful, Sligo were on the up, we had the back door, there was a lot happening there for you to try and keep the batteries charged and keep that full focus, because it was pretty much a 12-month, you might get your couple of months off around Christmas at the time, but of course slowly that evaporated as well. But just coming up then, Eamon, in the 2007, just those couple of years in between, again, you were thereabouts so many years. Mm. Was there a time before 2007 that you thought this is going to happen? Was it one of those ones where, right, it's this year? No, definitely next year. Was there a build up towards it like that?
I tell you what, there was a change in the mindset, and I suppose for me it was Fordy left, and obviously we got in James Cairns. He's a brother of the great Nicky Cairns, and James is a really, really good guy, and we got on well, and James actually made me captain again that year, and we just really connected. And Brendan, so to paint the picture for you, and this is the mindset that really frustrated me within Sligo. Like, we were up there, and I talked around there in 01 and 02 and 03, and seeing the All-Ireland winners, Galway, Armagh, Tyrone, and we were there mixing with them, nearly beaten. And if you were to play them another day, we could beat them. You know what I mean? That's how close it was. It was tit for tat. We had the personnel, we had the players. And then 04 arrives, and there was a decision made that there was going to be an All-Ireland B competition, and Sligo, people in Sligo and members of the Sligo County Board voted for it and insisted that Sligo should go into this competition, a secondary competition. So for years of us trying to sort of say, lads, let's try and change the mindset here in Sligo that we are not a second, you know, we are the, for want to call it a second tier team. Let's get the mindset. Let's get everybody on a wave here and convince people that we're better than a second tier competition. But unfortunately, our county board dragged us right back down into that quagmire of division of a second tier competition. And you know, the narrative was, wouldn't it be great to see a Sligo man going up lifting a cup at the Hogan Stand? And it was like nobody had any interest in it. And we had a team meeting. James had played. We'd gone through the county side of things. Unfortunately, we didn't win. We were beaten against, I think it was Mayo, beat us that year in 04. And you know, the mindset then, we had a team meeting, says, lads, we are not going to play in this competition. And there was a sense then that was agreed across the board in principle. And then one or two guys got squeezed by the county board, and there was all of a sudden there was a second meeting, and a few fellas went to that meeting, and there was a bit of a breakdown. There was a bit of love lost among the whole panel of players, because some went to play and some didn't. And I'd been captain, and I made my stance very, very clear. I didn't want to know about a second-tier competition, because I didn't want to be playing. I believed that we were a better team than that. I believed that if our mindset and if we got an attitude around our county that we're a better team than what we're showing, it could change attitudes and it could raise the bar a little bit even higher, and we could go on to win something. But unfortunately, we got dragged back down to a bottom level. The team went up to Croke Park and they got bet by Armagh. I think it was Armagh or Wicklow. Somebody bet them in the All-Ireland B competition. I don't even know what it was, because I didn't even watch it. But I was so disappointed with a bunch of people that actually went part in that. And, you know, it affected us for a couple of years after that. Dom Corrigan came in then, and there was no real sort of... There was, you know, Dom did his level best, but you could see that there was a bit of a fracture between the whole setup. And we were so lucky that Tommy Brehney had come in as a selector that year with Dom Corrigan. And obviously, Dom's second year, this big story with the white van. Out of pure luck, I happened to be training on the... I had to be working on that Tuesday night when Dom got the road. The county board came in, had a meeting, things weren't going well, and they got rid of Dom, and Tommy Brehney then decided he'd take over, you know, just for the interim of that final year. But Tommy's attitude was that if I'm going to take this over, that I'm going to stay for the following year, but we're going to start our building now the year previously. So we had to go down to Wicklow to stay off relegation, and we won that game. And that's when the start had happened from 06 to 07, where Tommy then came in. John Kent was the great footballer. John Kent, one of Sligo's better footballers. I know you described me as being one of them, but I think John Kent was unbelievable at St Mary's man, and he was the support shop down here in Sligo. And John was also a selector and trainer with Tommy. And the two of them came together. They knew Sligo lads inside out, and we just solely focused on trying to win a Connacht title. And, you know, the league went indifferently, nothing spectacular. Our trip then was to New York. We had to go over to New York and play in New York. And you could just sense that there was something happening. Lads training every night, not a word of a lie. No. And I've had been a lot of training sessions. Every night there was a fight or an argument. The level of competition in the group just grew and grew and grew. We went over to New York. We stayed over there for a few extra days to do extra training, albeit lads did it drunk. But we did it. But it was a great bond, a great, great unity came together, and you can just sense it. And, you know, we were lucky. We played against Galway in that Connacht final. And, you know, when you look back on the game, geez, you talk about the game evolves and the game at times, you know, we were very naive. They had chances and they didn't take them. Peter Ford was their manager. So he had gone from Sligo to Galway, and then it was, you know, I mean, there was so many, you know, connections between the both teams. And we were just lucky to hang on. Jack Fallon had a shot at the very, very end of the game to equalise the game, and it drifted wide, and, you know, it was just...
I was looking back at your face on the sideline. I mean, you obviously had picked up an injury just before that, and you were half out on the pitch. That game, of course, the highlight of that game, let's be honest, is that unbelievable Royal Rovers-type goal that you scored.
David Kelly, just one man in the full forward line, and here's Eamon O'Hara surging through. Hanley trying to get back to it. O'Hara! What a fantastic goal! What a goal. It was very close to goal of the season. Just watch O'Hara. Right, bring the barrel up and absolutely flashes it to the net with the left foot. It's a tremendous goal. A great goal by Eamon O'Hara.
Tremendous goal there. Do you know what, Eamon? Do you know, it's amazing that was the Connacht title that you won, and that goal of yours kind of just typified everything about you, you know. I mean, when you were going through, the way you let that shot fly, as you were on about your control and that power, as soon as you got the far side, everybody knew. You could see the Galway boys were like, oh, he's gone. And then, as you said, the control that you talked about, running was one thing, but just as you hit that ball, you got to have that second to calm. And boom, and my God, there's ways to finish a goal, but roof of the net is the ultimate. Listen, I was jumping out of my seat. I remember going yes at the time, because even though I've Galway blood, you're always on the underdog. You know, they had so many great days, but this was going to be Sligo's day and your day.
Yeah, I suppose the goal at the time, and it's funny, like we had, again, the message that Tommy was always saying, we had to, guys that had to bag the ball inside. That was one of our letdowns down throughout the years. We used to get some great ball into the full forward line, but it would never stick. Cornerback would get a hand in, and then the sort of chance would go. So the message was always bag the ball inside. And Michael McNamara that day, he played so well at centre back. He just moved with ease, but he played a lovely ball into David, and David had come a little bit deeper because obviously Mark Brainy was playing at 11 had come moved into midfield, just drawing out some of the Galway players, and it just worked lovely. I just seen it, and it's you hear these stories and you hear them on ESPN and all this type of thing where things slow down and everything just looks easy and you see it in your mind's eye. But for me, that's exactly what kind of did happen, Dave. It was just, I saw Kelly coming out, you could see the hole inside, and I knew McNamara was gone. And if you look at the, even when you look at the TV, only I noticed it afterwards, straight after. I haven't really watched it much since, but, well, I have watched it once or twice, but I had gone, I had gone before McNamara had kicked the ball, and I saw the ball, I could see it happening, and I got the run on Joe Bergen at that stage. And, you know, once I'd got around, once Kelly offloaded it, you know, it goes back to what I was talking about, about my dad at the start of the conversation. Dad used to say, just, you know, complement your pace with your solo and just compose yourself at that moment. And, you know, even though I didn't slow down physically, in my head I was composed. I just said, get this ball on target. If I keep it low, he has a chance, because I'm kicking it on my left foot. So it was in my weaker side. So I said, I'm going to keep it high, and then he'll have to, it'll just be the width of his hand is going to save it, because he'll not have time to move it. It'll be just with power, and that was the decision I made there and then. I knew Finian Hanley had pace as well, and Finian's biggest problem for me, and I, not his biggest problem, that's being disrespectful to him, but Finian used to lead with his feet a lot of the time. He used to block with his feet, and he didn't go in and reach in with his hand for some reason, and you know, and he didn't do it that day. And I think if he did do it that day, he probably would have been able to push me off. I could have lost a bit of balance, but he didn't, and thankfully it went on. But you know what I mean? You mentioned there that it was the difference, it was the highlight. It was. It helped win us the game, but like the points that Mark Burney scored that day, or Kieran Quinn scored that day, they were the ones that also helped, you know.
Yeah, and just what we were talking about the start of the show, Joe Bergen, you see, your natural midfielder, that bit taller, was never going to be able to catch you.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what you had, that drive that you had with that physical ability. And I mean, listen, what a stalwart. You had so many years with Sligo. Was it 18 at senior? What many was it?
18 at senior, yeah. I was putting my hand up for a 19 senior campaign, but Kevin
West
had a different plan.
The famous Kevin Walsh, 4-day collective training, and you were like, hey, hold on a second here, man, my body's gone through the mill. You needed a bit of understanding, which didn't come. Eamon. And it's a bit of a pity that things have to... And you often hear these stories where things should have ended a bit more sensible around, right, this doesn't suit. The fact that it had to go that way. I mean, we at that time, we could never envisage a Sligo without Eamon O'Hara, and I'm sure the younger lads in it would have much preferred to have you around. But managers come in and listen. They have their own way.
They make the decisions. And you suppose, you know, at the time, you're as pissed off and annoyed with the whole situation. And you know, for me, I thought Kevin was kind of calling my bluff out a little bit. But I knew from the previous conversation that I had the previous year with the strength and conditioning and the coach, Donegal lad, I won't name his name. But anyway, like, you know, since that, he's come back and apologised about it. But, like, at the time, you could sense that there was, you know, they were trying to change things up a little bit and get collective training, because some fellas weren't doing it, but they were painting everybody with the same brush, because some fellas were very dedicated to the training. And Kevin was a great manager, he was a great guy, and, you know, passed on some great knowledge and everything else, and lads really enjoyed him, and I got on very, very well with Kevin. And you know, but I could sense just the narrative just changing a little bit. And then come the 29th of October, I get a phone call that we want you in 2 days a night, running, and 2 days a night in the gym. And that has to be a collective session. And, you know, I was willing to do that away from work, because work, obviously, you know yourself, Brendan. I mentioned it there at the start, obviously, when we were talking off air about, you know, further developing your knowledge and your, you know, when I'm in the medical industry, so we need to be further educating ourselves all the time, or look to be, or be, have that to perceive that you're doing it, and that the company you work for are happy with you doing that. And I had to put off all of mine during the year when everyone else and all my colleagues were doing these courses. I had to put them off because I couldn't go to the UK, or I couldn't go to Spain, or I couldn't go to America to do these courses, 3, 4, 5 day courses. And then come the back end when football was over, that's when I had to do them. And I explained that to Kevin, but he wasn't for listening. And I just said, listen, Fred, if things change come January, you know, give me a shout, no worries about it. And we left it at that. We didn't speak since that time, but I suppose I was expecting a call in January. It never came. I kept myself fit. I did exactly what the boys were doing. I got the program sent to me, and I did everything, and I was in good shape, got my body in great shape. But, you know, there was a sense there then that one thing led to another, and, you know, time moved on, and come April time, and they were very much struggling in the league at that stage, and there was obviously the local newspapers down here kept driving the narrative about trying to get me back, that make a difference, I do this, I do that. And, you know, credit to them for keeping it in the limelight. But the reality was that I knew in my heart that if I wasn't part of the team in April, I wasn't going to be part of it. And, you know, that's when I made the decision to pull away and to retire. And, you know, I was delighted I did. I was very, very happy with that decision.
Yeah, listen, I mean, you'd obviously served your time there. If it was 10 or 15 exactly. years previous, you could come in after April, but such was the demands. Now, you needed to be in certain...
I need to be at the pace, and you know.
And you took up Pondery, and, like, and straight away, and obviously you had the famous Sligo, of course, your first game on Sligo, get beat by London, and you didn't hold back then, of course. And listen, I mean, you, honesty is what you're supposed to do, and if you sugarcoat everything, sure, what's the point? And I think looking at you that night, they knew a lot of people were going to have issue with you being so honest, but that's how you played. So you automatically, you didn't want to go on and be PC and play maybe what a lot of some of the Sunday game guys do. It's all very fudged. You just went at it, and I was like, right, that's what I want to see. And although a lot of people might have been happy with your honesty, it is your opinion, that's what you thought, and you know that Sligo football inside out, you had the right to say it.
I had the right to say it, and you're right. You know the crack that goes on in there. You know the politics that goes on in there, Devon. In fairness, I was afforded the opportunity to go into the Sunday game, and, you know, out of absolute... It was such an honour to be actually asked to do that role. And, you know, I had a couple of evenings and it went okay. It's like everything, you're just trying to find your feet. And, you know what I mean? Obviously, the comparisons now, rather than analysing the football, I think there's a section now where you analyse an analyst, you know what I mean? So, like, everyone that makes an opinion has been analysed. And for me then, you know what I mean? I knew Sligo football inside out, knew what was going on, seeing what type of training sessions were going on. And you know what I mean? You had Oisin McConville, you had, you know, Lord Rest Eugene McGee. No disrespect to the guy, I know he's passed on, but, you know, using the words, all, it was scurrilous behaviour by Eamon O'Hara to say what he said. But Eugene McGee, for 20 years prior to that, wasn't able to name two fellas on the Sligo team. You know, he was for years called Martin Breheny, you know, and that is the type of, you know, that's the type of attention to detail that frustrated me, that these fellas knew nothing. Oisin wouldn't have been able to name five Sligo footballers, yet he was out saying, oh, it was sour grapes. they hadn't a clue what the situation was. I knew what was going on in Sligo at that stage. I knew that the training wasn't good enough. I knew that there was fellas brought into the panel and there was the disharmony about all of that. I knew there was no bus organised over in London to pick them up from the airport. I knew gear had gone missing. I knew there was no balls out there for them to do the warm-up. So I knew exactly where the situation was, and I also knew London were ready to ready to pull an ambush, and that's exactly what happened, particularly when Sligo lost a man and were going into 14. But it just happened that I was on the show that night, and I just called it as I saw it. Obviously, I went a little bit further when I talked around the county board and our School of Excellence and Rust on the Gate, etc., etc., etc. But people took it as, you know, fair play to for being honest, and I got credit for it. And then some people took offence to the fact that I was calling for Kevin Walsh's head. The reality of it was that Kevin Walsh walked 2 weeks later. So what was the point in staying on to go and get hammered again against Cork, I think they played, and then announce your retirement? And he should have done the right thing and walked when he got bet by London. I know how much money that was invested into Kevin Walsh, his management team, for the last 5 years up to that. I know it offhand, and if anyone ever wants to ask me privately, I'll tell them. But to go to London in your fifth year and get bet wasn't good enough. It just wasn't good enough. And that's what really annoyed
me. I mean, I can tell straight away from the outside, what you have, right, and because you were the talisman of Sligo, you were a great player, you're an all-star, good-looking guy, you were going to be hated off by certain people, right? Let's be honest about it. This is what happens in sport, and it happens in Ireland a bit. So while you're winning and you're in the middle of this, it's probably not bad. But if you then peep your head up and have that strong opinion, there's a load of people maybe waiting in the background to say, I'm going to give it to this O'Hara boy. And that's the way football, that's the way our GAA is. There's
correct.
Obviously so many good people out there. There's a load of people that maybe you don't realise are waiting there. And once they get the chance, the knife's gone in, and that's those people that come out criticising you.
And that's exactly what it is. You know what I mean? The funny thing about it, half my point that I was making was a lot about to do with the county board. Donal O'Cusack there last year, and this was last year, so this is 6 years later, he came out and he ridiculed the Cork County Board about the hurling and everything else. And he was put up on a pedestal and everyone's giving him a clap in the back saying, oh, he's fair play to Donal O'G. So, like, when you actually compare what's being said 1 week versus another week, you know, it's not that. Thankfully, I don't sit at home here shaking in the corner saying, oh God, I hope people like me. You know what I mean? And as you know yourself, neither of us are like that. But like, that's where some people can be affected. And like, you just have to take it. It's my opinion. It might not be the right opinion, but it's my opinion. And I don't pass. I wouldn't. If somebody, if you ring me up tomorrow morning and ask me, you know, Eamon, tell me what your thoughts about Donegal and Declan Bonner or whatever, I'd just say, Dev, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
Because I don't know. I'd have to ring somebody like John Hearn and in Letterkenny there and tell me, John, do you know anything that's going on? I'd ring you first.
Well, don't be ringing Hearn.
Well,
be a bad
whoever, like, but you know what I mean. But you have to do your due diligence before you actually pass comment and try and then be honest and say, you know something, I cannot give a comment on that because I just don't know what's going on in the county. Maybe, or even it's the same when, you know, you're in the business yourself of doing the commentary and analysis. You know, you might have a logic reason that, you know, Paddy McBrearty might be playing well, you know, today. And if you ask enough questions, you could find out, well, Paddy McBrearty, you know, he gave his hamstring a bit of a tweak on the Tuesday night beforehand. He's not moving as well, but they started him either way. At least then you can explain that to the public. If you don't do your homework, you're going to be left with egg on your face. And I think that was a lesson for everybody. Like, you know, I knew what I was talking about.
Yeah, listen, and listen, I mean, I love hearing you on since you're a regular contributor there, and it's magic stuff. You even dipped your toe into management and all, Eamon, so you're covering all blocks. I did it myself 1 year, and we won the championship here at Unions. And
You were a one-hit wonder.
I got in and out very quick, my man. But, Eamon, listen, brilliant story. There's so much on that, Eamon. And to be honest, I really enjoyed looking back and doing a bit of research on you last night and pulling up some of them old clips and memories. Fantastic time, because I think knowing you and knowing, listen, you're a great lad and how much you put your heart into that and what a great story that was with Sligo. As I said at the start of the show, between Turlestrand and Sligo, the brilliant times that you have with them, it was a great watch for me and a great look back for me at your career, Eamon, and thanks so much for joining us in the DL Debate.
Dave, thanks for those lovely words. I appreciate it, and thanks for having me on. And you know yourself, we get on great, and you're doing great stuff there. So keep up the good work, and I do tune in, listen to it. So fair play to you. And
I'll be back in Strand Hill soon.
Yes, when the Strand opens, we'll go down for a sneaky surf and a steak.
Surf and turf. Even top man.
Thanks, Matt. You, sir. Talk to you, sir.
Take care. Well, now, in the world of GA, takes you into many different places. Not just games, but different nights, you know, panel nights, talk nights. And I was lucky enough to meet my next guest at one of them and get to know him. He's a man, he was 9 years Derry PRO. He's steeped in GA and other sports, including rugby, even dabbles in a bit of soccer. It's the one and only Gerry Donnelly.
Thank you very much for the invite. Much appreciated.
Great to have you, Gerry. Listen, I as I say, me and you met at a couple of talk nights. I've met you at a couple of games since. And after dinner speaking, Gerry, which you are, listen, you're top class. I remember going to a few nights and just certain people have a certain gift, but you certainly have that there, a fantastic way, and it's a big part of your life. Well, it was up until the COVID-19.
It was, absolutely, Brendan, and it was something that I worked at and developed over a term of about 20 years. When I was a young lad, I always harboured a love for singing and entertaining, and probably if I had my life to live over again, I would have tried to go down that route, but things turned out differently. And I was living in Randallstown after we got married in 1970, and I got involved in a group called the Round Table, which was an association of businessmen who used to run things to raise money for charities and needy causes. And when I got into the chair in 1981, I had to speak regularly as the chairman, and I just did it in my own way, and always tried to infuse a bit of humour, because I found that in life generally there was there wasn't enough fun. People were too serious, and about 20 years ago, I started semi-professionally on the circuit, and it has taken me to some weird and wonderful places. I've met some amazing people in the last 20 years, people that I never would have met, people from the world of politics, people from the world of commerce, and most importantly for me, people from the world of sport. As you said, Brenton, GAA, rugby, Gaelic would have been the main thrust of my after-dinner speaking in the early days. And because there aren't that many people who do it, the word gets out that there's a new kid on the block, so why did you try him? And that's basically the way that it works.
You're talking, Gerry, about people like, you've done nights with people like Peter Schmeichel, Roy McIlroy, Martin O'Neill, rugby nights, you Francois Pienaar, guys like that.
People from the top drawer, Francois Pienaar, captained South Africa to the World Cup in 1995, Phil Bennett, of Wales, naturally, Willie John McBride and Willie Anderson, loads of them, and soccer people as well, Norman Whiteside, Alan Mullery, Tommy Docherty, and Schmeichel, who was one of my heroes, because I would be a man new aficionado.
And then, Gerry, tell me, your humour obviously to us would be quite Irish, I suppose, and some of the wee gags you tell about growing up and that. Is that pretty universal to these other guys from outside the country?
Well, so long as you know in advance, Brendan, you can tune it accordingly. Obviously, you're not going to somebody like Schmeichel, who was Danish, wasn't going to appreciate stories about the 12th and things like that. But still, he said to me at the end of the evening, I did not understand everything, but what I understand was good.
He sounds like he'd be a great storyteller himself. But Gerry, so, before you got on the circuit, you went to school in Mahara, was it, or Maharafelt?
I went to Reading Endowed, a rugby school in Maharafelt, yes, for 7 years.
Maharafelt.
And... Uh, enjoyed every day of it. Made friends then who are still friends, Brendan, and I think that that speaks volumes for the connections that I made. While I was there,
you were always a Derry fan as well. The club and county was a big part of your life.
I was born into a GAA family. My late father played for Sean O'Leary's New Bridge Club in the 40s and 50s. He also played county football for Derry and county football for Antrim, which was a rarity. But, excuse me, I obviously got involved in the club at an early age and played underage and minor. And when I was on the cusp of making senior football in the early 60s, it was very difficult to get on the Newbridge team because we were a major power in Derry football at that time, and we would regularly have provided 4 and 5 players for the county team. So I struggled to make it, but I would have to say it in no way diminished my enthusiasm. I was the first guy at training. I was the first guy there every Sunday for the games. And if I got picked, I was over the moon. And if I didn't, I didn't lose a head the way young fellas would nowadays and throw the boots under the corner. I just waited my chance. And but having said that, whilst I love playing, sport can provide some great highs and some great lows for you as a player. I remember turning up very early one Sunday for a game at Newbridge, and I was standing and the manager arrived, Harry Gribben, who was probably the only manager I had during my whole senior career. And Harry came over to me, and I thought all my Christmases had arrived, and he said to me, have you got your boots with you? And I said, I have, aye. He said, would you lend them to Jackie Martin? He forgot his. And that's the sort of thing that you had to cope with, but which I did cope with, you know. Even though that put me in a very difficult position, because whilst I didn't want Jackie Martin to have a bad game, it meant that he either had to have a bad game and be taken off or be injured for me to get my boots back.
Yes.
So, but I loved every minute of it. It gave me the platform. 1964, I played for Derry Minors. That was my last year as a minor. And then in 1965, Derry won their first All Ireland Minor Championship. But no, Gaelic has been a part of my life since my early teens.
You must have been handy enough then, Jerry. You made the minors. I didn't do that, to be honest. And that was different times then, Jerry. Football was certainly, as you said there, was a lot more tougher. You know, there wasn't this arm around the shoulder stuff at all. You played then seniors, and you were, I suppose, the whole side of the PRO. How did that come about? You just wanted to, I suppose, help the county and have some input to it.
Well, Brenton, when I stopped playing, as I said earlier, after we got married in 1970, we went to live in Randallstown for 31 years, and I played a bit of rugby there during the winter, and still turned out for the club during the summer, either at reserve or sub on the senior team or whatever. But in 19, I was club secretary for a while, and then for about 10 or 15 years, I had only passing interest in the GAA because I had started to work for myself. I had 3 young children and a wife and a mortgage, all of whom needed attention. And in 1996, I was approached by the Glen Club in Mahara and asked if I would allow my name to go forward as PRO with the Derry County Board. To be honest, I didn't know what that entailed, but because Frankie Kearney, who was the man who made the approach, was a man who didn't like you to say no, put my name forward, and I was duly elected, and for the next 11 years, I had the most wonderful time as PRO for my county.
Isn't that amazing? And you know, Eamon Coleman, Brian Mullins, Mickey Moore and Crozier were all managers at the time. I can only imagine you, Jerry, at those meetings, because as you said, they're often a wee bit, let's say, boring for want of a better word. People going through the motions and not much life, and I could just imagine you injecting a wee bit of humour into it, which I would nearly go to that meeting just to see what was happening. But you had this, you developed this way with the match programmes. You put your own style on the players and the vocations that they were doing. you started to play about the add that wee bit of humour on the match day.
Yes, Brenton. I just thought that there wasn't enough fun in sport at that time, and there's less nowadays, but I just thought it was getting too serious. So I noticed that the match programmes, irrespective of what the county was you were visiting or who was visiting you, the match programmes had a sameness about them, and the pay and picks for the players, you know, six of them were teachers and six of them were civil servants and one was a pharmacist. And I just thought that I would try to lighten it up a bit. So I started changing the professions for the players. And I must say, nobody enjoyed it more than the players themselves, because they looked forward on match days to getting into the dressing room and having a look at the match programme to see what profession I had given them that week. You know, somebody who was a bricklayer suddenly became a scientific officer, or somebody who was a plaster could have been basically anything. He could have been a surgeon. But if I can share one true story with you, a young fella contacted me one day. He was on the Derry panel. A young lad called Johnny Niblock from Macrofelt came from a great GAA dynasty in Macrofelt, and I had put Johnny in the match programme as a taxidermist. So I got a phone call one day at home, and he says, "Jerry, it's Johnny Niblock." I says, "Yes, Johnny, how's things?" Good. He says, "Jerry, would you do me a favour?" I says, "I can, of course, if I can." He said, "Would you change that job in the match programme?" I says, "Why, what's the problem?" He says, "Jerry, Mammy's getting phone calls at home. There's people ringing her, asking her to stuff dogs and birds and cats and things." So I says, "Of course, Johnny. I'll do that. So mentally, I changed Johnny's job in my head. 2 weeks later, Derry were playing Antrim in the replay of an Ulster Championship at Celtic Park. As PRO, I was on the sideline with the microphone announcing the teams, etc. And I was standing between the two dugouts. I was in close proximity to Michael Daly, who was doing the match commentary for Radio Ulster, along with Adrian McGuckin. And late in the second half, I could hear Michael Daly announcing to the world, 22 minutes left in the game, and Derry are about to introduce 21-year-old air traffic controller for Macrofelt, Johnny Niblock." So Johnny changed from a taxidermist to a fully fledged air traffic controller in 2 weeks. And you know, nobody, as I say, nobody got more kick out of that than the players. It wasn't universally accepted by traditionalists, but I just put my own spin on it, and people enjoyed it. and hopefully that's why I served for 11 years.
Long time. Was it? Were you there in Eamon Coleman's time? Were you there in 93?
No, I wasn't. I wasn't, Brenton. I came in 96-97 season when Derry got to the Ulster final, and my arrival came at the same time as Derry had just appointed Brian Mullins as their manager. And Brian had a love-hate relationship with the press and the media. They loved him, but he hated them. But I got to know him very well. He was actually teaching in Cardona at the time.
That's right.
And he would have rung me regularly because he knew that I was very close to the team. That was the lovely thing for me, was that in 97, the nucleus of the All-Ireland winning team was still very much in place. Brawley, Tuchel, the Downies, Barton, Cassidy, McKeever, Tony Scullion. And they took to me very quickly, and I became part of the team. And I travelled in the bus, and I stayed in the hotels. And we had a great team, and of course, Eamon was the great bonding agent of it all, and I had known him since our early teens, since we were about 13 or 14. We had something in common. We both lost our mothers very, very early in our lives, and it gave us this sort of special connection, which lasted right up until the time of his death. But it was a great time. We won the Ulster Championship in 98.
You had to bring that up. You and your wee buddy, Brawley. My God, I'm never going to forget this.
Oh, that's right. He took that pass from Geoffrey McGonagall.
Or Geoffrey. And, some characters.
We won the match, and the crowd was on the pitch, and the Derry goalkeeper at that time, a young fella from Dungiven called Owen McCluskey. After Brawley scored the goal, Owen was like a lot of goalkeepers. He just had this mad streak. He climbed up onto the crossbar and stood on the crossbar. The Kieran McKeever threatened to go up and bring him down. So that was a great time. And then in 99-2000 season, much against all the odds, we got to an All-Ireland semi-final against Galway. And we were doing incredibly well in the game. And Eamon Coleman wasn't on the touchline because he had been banned to the stand for a couple of months for some remark he had made about a referee. And we know what happened there. I think it was Matthew Clancy, very late in the game, scored a goal.
That's right.
And what could have been something very special, because Galway went on and won the All-Ireland. We knew that we were as good a team as them. We won a National League that year as well after a replay against Meath. I was PRO when we won the 1997 All-Ireland Under-21 title against a great Meath side. And that Derry Under-21 side spawned some great, great players like Niall McCusker, Johnny McBride, Paul McFlynn, Enda Muldoon, Sean Marty Lockhart, just a whole raft of top-drawer players where we're so lucky. 2002.
We always expected Derry at that time for Derry to be at the top. Always. They might drop a small bit because of that massive club pedigree that Derry had, way above Donegal at the time. I mean, Derry club teams every year were in the mix to win Ulster. Donegal teams, up in the recent times, never had a prayer. And where Derry has gone to now, I mean, it's funny, sometimes it has to go to the very bottom before you can re-energise and come back. But there seemed to be a real disconnect between the county and the club. You know, Donegal here, everybody wants to play for Donegal, and the team's the main thing. And as we keep hearing about Derry, the clubs now, it's almost like the love behind the club and the passion behind the club has stopped the county team evolving. You know, the likes of Slough Neil, there's no doubting that Slough Neil number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then we may play for Derry. You know, you get that feeling across here in Donegal.
Well, I think it's a fairly well illustrated fact of that disconnect between club and county and Derry, and that has evolved. That just didn't happen overnight, Brent. That has evolved over a few years. You know, 5 years ago we were in Division One, and we just the bottom just fell out of our world in real terms, and all of a sudden we were in Division Four, and it's very, very difficult to get back up. It's a long way back up there, and there is a very difficult mindset there that in order to get us back to where Donegal and in Tyrone are, we nearly have to rewrite history in terms of club versus county. And don't get me wrong, I know everybody loves their club, but there isn't enough passion at the minute in Derry. And until we get that rejuvenated, I just think that we're still going to struggle, because I think the GAA world knows that Derry has, it's not about not having the players, it's about having the ambition more than anything to play for their county. And we have, that has to be infused in players from their school days.
You know, but Jerry, there was some brilliant underage teams even recently, obviously, you know, coming down of Derry Minor and under 21, you know, that pedigree's there. My fear would be now, Jerry, the gap is growing all the time between the setups of teams and how professional they're getting. The lower teams, there's a gap pulling away. Now, what'll stand to Derry is the talent is obviously there. Now, what I think is you need a few ingredients. You obviously need the players, which you have. You need the people in the county to be behind the team, which isn't really there at the minute. Not in the biggest crowd it should be. Obviously, the Celtic Park thing and all that, you know, was a bad idea. You also need your county board behind you to get those mixed together, Jerry. But the main thing is, I think, first, having the players. And the players are there, and you can see from underage, they're well able to compete and be, you know, the best in the Ulsters and get into the All-Ireland finals and that. So there's hope for Derry, but at the minute, it's in terms of the senior team, it's well off being able to compete, say at Ulster level.
We have we have a tough time ahead, undoubtedly, Brenton. But, you know, as you said, the players are there. We have got three. Or four schools. You know, people used to think that we only had St. Pat's in terms of providing young players, but we have St. Mary's and Macrofet, we have St. Pius's, we have the college in Derry. We have got the base. We have a strong, an incredibly strong club culture. If you look at the success of, as you said earlier, the number of clubs in Derry who have got the All-Ireland club semi-finals and finals and won it is on a par with anybody in the whole of the country. But it's just getting it all pulled together. And I must say, when Rory come in, at the start of the season, I was very hopeful, and in some ways, it was disappointing. Not just at sports level, the way things have turned out with the arrival of the pandemic and how it has affected people's lives, and and people's families. And I think it'll be a while before we're in a position to move forward, because I keep hearing different stories from the GAA as to how we're going to move it forward. And but please God, in the fullness of time, sooner rather than later, that we will see some positivity, and that we will get back to what we love doing, and that we can hopefully get Derry back to, and this is not me going OTT, get back at our rightful place, because Derry was always at the top table, because Derry deserved to be at the top table. But you have to earn these things. You have to earn these things, and I'm hopeful. I just hope that I hope I live long enough at 74. At 74,
Well, listen, the body's good, the mind's sharp anyway, and the body will follow that, Jerry. And listen, as much as we get back to games, brilliant. I hope in the not too distant future we'll be sitting in a crowd somewhere about the north there, listening to telling us a few yarns. That's what I'm looking forward to also, Jerry. And listen, appreciate you taking the time out there to talk to us here in the DL debate.
If I can just leave you with a quick anecdote about the fella said to his mate one day at work, he says, the wife and me's not getting on well at the minute. And his mate says, why, what's wrong? He says, she thinks I'm spending too much time around the club. He says, how much time are you spending around the club? Well, he says, I go down on a Monday night for the club meeting. On a Tuesday, I go down to watch the team training. Wednesday's the bingo. Thursday, I go back to watch the team training again. Friday, you go down to give them a hand with a lotto, and Saturday, I line out the pitch for the match, and there's a match on Sunday. And his mate says, Jesus Christ, you are spending a lot of time around the club. How long are you married? He says, 24 seasons.
Top man, Jerry. You have a good day. I'll talk to you soon, sir. Thank you very much.
God bless. Thank you, Dave.
Right, folks, that's a wrap. Episode 17. Brilliant chatting to Eamon O'Hara. Great life story. And Jerry Donnelly. Two great guys. Thanks so much for sharing your story with us. I want to thank Kenneth in the studio for producing and keeping me right. Still doing our social distancing recordings. Also, I'd like to thank Sister Sarah's, Kieran Brogan, and the Dry Arts 24-Hour Complex for the sponsorship of the show. Few people listening in around the world. Mick Gallagher would be listening intently to Jerry Donnelly there. Mick is a dairy man out in the Middle East, a good friend of mine, listening in there. And also Paul McDade out in Philadelphia, the one and only DJ Mac, spinning the tunes out there, keeping it sunny side up. Listen, Paul, hope you're doing well. That's it for episode 17. I'll talk to you next week.
The DL Debate, brought to you by the Dry Arch Complex and 24-Hour Service Station, Letterkenny.